Okay, good morning. The party continues. Open a work session on House Bill 3201. Representative Phil Barnhart and General Caldwell.
You're up too.
Okay. General Caldwell, I can't believe you want to amend this bill. Bring an amendment to this bill?
I can't.
Well, I'm going to defer to the elected representative of the great people of Eugene and let him explain what that amendment's all about. But we've just enjoyed this so much that I'm thrilled to be down here every day. And
you decided to get in on it.
Process, and I would have been here even if it wasn't our bill, just for the entertainment.
Okay. Representative Phil Barnhart, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Phil Barnhart, State Representative, House District 11, Central Lane and Linn Counties. I have constituents out as far as Leeburg, as far north as Lebanon, as far south as Cresswell, and a few people in Eugene as well. Thank you very much for inviting me to come and talk to you this morning about the, I think it's the Dash 36 Amendment, which refers to the TRICARE program, statewide TRICARE program. And I would refer you to especially the boldface material in that amendment on page 10 and 11. Of course, the rest of it is also important as it, because it makes a number of changes in other parts of the statutes that are related to the Oregon Military Department and to the National Guard Youth Challenge Program, as well as the TRICARE program. But what I wanted to talk to you about, if I may today, just briefly, is the importance of this TRICARE program. What happened in the past was that TRICARE, which is the military insurance company, had difficulties with paying its bills on time. Medical providers and other providers that were receiving payments for services rendered were having to wait long periods of time. Recently, a new contractor has taken over the western part of the United States and is actually getting bills paid at the same rate as they're paid by Blue Cross. And guess why? Because, of course, it's a subsidiary of Blue Cross. So part of the purpose of this tax credit is to encourage medical providers to get back into the program, to give them the experience of getting their bills paid on time instead of months late. This is a little incentive for them to do that. Also, because of changes made by Congress, more dependents of National Guard's men and women will be eligible for relatively low premiums to participate in TRICARE. So they're going to need more medical providers in Oregon to provide those services in order to get the services that those families need. And I think one of the important issues from the standpoint of the legislature is that as we are working on trying to get more people covered by health insurance, the federal government is actually making it a little bit easier for us to help do that. And that's why I recommend this amendment to the bill. It does sunset, and the sunset's a reasonable one, because the purpose of this is not to establish a permanent subsidy, but instead to get the medical professionals involved in using TRICARE and hopefully having a different experience than they did in the past.
Questions for Representative Barnhart? And this now is a statewide amendment rather than just the rural only. And Representative Barnhart or General Caldwell, if you could just comment briefly on why that decision was made.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the primary reason that we believe that it needs to be statewide is as with our population basis, of course, that is where our soldiers
Chuck, that's twice.
Reside.
Sorry, General Caldwell.
I thought my time was up. But thank you for letting me continue. But as a good representative has indicated, Congress has approved a expansion of the program to allow regular drilling guardsmen and reservists to buy this insurance. And a good number of our soldiers come from the populated areas, as with population, obviously. So by making it only rural counties, then we're going to limit a good number of the people not being able to partake in the program. And unfortunately, a high number of our people do not have the occupational jobs that allow them health insurance. So I think what you're going to see is a growth in coverage, and even though it's got its issues, and its primary issue right now is a legacy issue as opposed to a factual issue of what's going on currently with TriWest. They've done an outstanding job of providing coverage, and they've done an outstanding job of making payments. So we've got to break down this norm that lasted for 10 years that caused this to be such a negative issue with providers. We think this will do that, and I think that's important that we cover everybody, not just the rural counties, for those reasons. I will also, you know, right now I talked to TriWest yesterday, and they are presently serving about 30,000 patients or members of TriCare, and many of those are retired. So now so if you got 30,000 now and you add another, say, 10,000-12,000 single people, they're not all single, so they're going to have probably 2.5-3 people per. So you're looking at another 20,000 patients that are going to be added to the TRICARE load here in Oregon. That's going to increase the demand for the limited services greatly. It should increase a tremendous amount of money coming into the state. And I think it's fair that we go back and do the analyze it, come back to the legislature, and then see what this does or doesn't do. I think that'll be helpful for all of us to figure out how to make this a better program.
I think that's what I'm most excited about, is to just see if this incentive, put it out there and see if it works. It's definitely the right thing to do. Yes. And if it works and if it's effective, or if we need to rework it somehow or do a different type of program.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, so let me see if I understand this. What you're telling us is that in the past, the federal government has been very slow in making payments, so much so that it's frustrated the caregivers to a point where they've refused to cooperate with the program. And now you have a delivery system that's much more efficient and up and on time, but that the caregivers out there are reticent to change because they remember the past experience. And so what we need to do is to break that down by giving them a financial incentive to once again enter into the program, and hopefully that in the next 4 years then they'll have a good experience of timely payments, and the program will prosper and veterans will prosper.
And Oregonians who might not otherwise have medical insurance will.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think that's exactly the point. I think there's another point that we talked about the other day, and I don't want it lost on anyone. Right now it's tied to Medicare and Medicaid payments, and we are working diligently with our congressional delegation to solve that problem and try to get those raised up, because, frankly, that is also an impediment against providers taking on too many. And I've talked to many doctors, and we've gone around and knocked on doors trying to get them to sign up, and they'll all tell you very frankly, they said, bottom line is, if I took all the TRICARE patients that were out there plus Medicare and Medicaid, I'd be out of business. So they have to manage that. So the trick is getting more of their fellow providers involved so they all don't have to take, one person doesn't have to take it all. Now, having said that, we have a doctor here in Salem who is our former state surgeon, who set up a practice with physician assistants that he manages. I think he's got 3 or 4. He's almost strictly TRICARE and Medicare, and he's making a living at it. He said it's not a bad deal. So we're also encouraging him to take that model, and we're trying to get it out to other providers as well to show them that it can be done. So this is really heavy spade work from the ground roots level to try to get this problem solved. And we really, really appreciate this opportunity to add a little something to that to maybe make it work better.
Great.
And if I could just add one comment to that point that the good general made, Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe. The one of the problems that Oregon has had for a long time is that our reimbursement rate for Medicare is extremely low, and you're all very familiar with that.
Yeah.
Bringing veterans and National Guardsmen into this system in this way may actually improve our political clout to be working on that much larger problem.
Great. One other issue while we have you, Chair Barnhart. So the earned income tax credit extension of the sunset date, my understanding, we found another House bill that we can amend that into from our conversation last night.
Okay.
So I just wanted to get that on the record that we found another vehicle to put the earned income tax credit extension of the sunset date into.
Is that a bill in this committee, Mr. Chair?
It is. What's the 2810, the House Bill 2810?
Thank you. And I believe we did have that conversation, Mr. Chair, yesterday, if I remember right, along with all of the others that we've had in the last little bit.
We swear people in the Senate to ensure we don't. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Where's that ringer when you need it?
While we're discussing other unrelated topics with the House Chair, you have Senate Bill 514, and we have Amendment 22, which would put Senate Bill 514 into 3201. And this deals with zones along riparian zones and so on, and the ability to protect them. Do you prefer to deal with that issue in your committee in the form of 514, or would you prefer us to load it into the Christmas tree?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, that bill is being posted for tomorrow in the House Revenue Committee. I have vetted the bill, since this is an area I know very little about. I vetted the bill through the environmental and conservation experts in the House, and they agree that this is a good bill, and we're going to move it, assuming the committee is willing to do that,
okay. Well,
tomorrow.
Thank you. Then we don't need the 22 amendment.
Senator Monroe, since the Sopranos are off there, he's playing Tony Soprano on our committee and locking in the Senator George.
That's what I was going to say. Friends that are watching at home, this is called negotiation.
Out in the open.
On the record.
Thank you very much, Representative Barnhart, General Caldwell. We really appreciate you went back and worked this amendment out in 24 hours, and thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Are we in the work session?
Yes, Senator George.
You want to move dash A36?
Senator George has moved the A36 amendments to House Bill 3201. Discussion. Objections to that motion?
Very happy with that.
It is a good improvement to the bill.
The bill just got better.
Chris, we should have done this before, but the fiscal impact of adopting the A36 was?
$2.7 million in 07-09. It's on the back page.
Mm-hmm.
And it's $6.2 million in 09-11.
Okay. Okay, so let's... Nature Conservancy, are you here to talk to us about the A37s? Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Never a good move not to be here when you have your amendments up.
I think they just showed up.
Yes, Senator George.
After reading the amendments, I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest because this might be something we would be interested in restoring an old lake bottom.
Okay. On the A37s.
37.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so note for the record, Senator George has declared a potential conflict of interest on the A37 amendments. Mr. Oxley.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Gary Oxley, Oxley and Associates, appearing before you this morning out of breath on behalf of the Nature Conservancy. We testified before this committee on Senate Bill 929. It was recommended that we make a couple of changes to the bill, and we did that. We included a cap of $1.8 million for the biennium and have a sunset provision that you suggested we put in the bill.
Thank you. And the mechanics of the 1.8, so if I was... If I had a lake bottom property or the testimony we had a couple months ago of a large ranch that I was considering using this incentive to Walk us through, if you could, the mechanics of how I would go about accessing this.
You would submit a package as required in here to the Department of Revenue. They would receive that package, stamp it, forward it, and it would be approved. And then that tax credit, which has limitations on it in terms of the 25% or the 75%, depending on whether it's been a property that's declared by the Department of Conservation as a high-rated property. And then you would be able to take that credit over a period of years as opposed to 1 year. So if someone were, for example, land rich, cash poor, this provides them an opportunity to take advantage of that credit.
For a long time. Questions for Mr. Oxley? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Ms. Chris, fiscal impact. Gary just gave it to us, but
it's $1.8 million per year. The impact that we had placed on the original bill was about $5 million in the first biennium, so we are expecting it to be fairly aggressively used, so the cap is low enough that I expect that we'll hit the cap in the first biennium.
Question, Senator George.
Just one fear, we may have to come back and look at it again, but would the potential be then if we had $5 million worth of applicants and $2 million worth of credit, and these credits are going to be spread over a period of time, so we're going to fill that project up to where it's going to be a while before anybody will get to apply again. Would that be the case? So we.
Yes, Senator. Okay. We hit that limit, but the sunset date in there gives the committee or a future committee the opportunity to come back and revisit that.
Good.
The committee could always revisit that in any session as well.
Yeah, I mean, my thought on that was actually with the sunset, we'd be able to take a look at the program, mm-hmm. see if it's working as advertised and that it's actually helping the landowner and a group like the Nature Conservancy, or if it's actually not serving the purpose and something we wouldn't want to renew.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
You ready to move?
Chris. Well, I was just going to point out that the cap here is, I guess it's a follow-up to Senator George's point. It would be, in a sense, a first-come, first-served basis with the Department of Revenue, as the people claimed it on their tax return.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably some moving as we speak.
Could I ask a further question?
Please, yeah. Senator George.
Okay, even though they're in the program and they're going to roll forward, they still have to get in line each tax year?
I believe that's the way it would work.
Okay. So they would have the ability to ask for it, and they've been approved and everything else, but they'd have to get in line.
Yeah. As I'm reading this, it's a little bit different from most certifications where there's a state agency that tracks the certifications and might have some other criteria for deciding which projects get approved.
Mm-hmm.
Here with the Department of Revenue, since they don't have – or well, maybe I shouldn't speak for the Department of Revenue.
Deborah, you want to come up and talk about how you would administer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, as staff has pointed out, this is a little bit different than what we ordinarily do. Most of the time when you have credits like this, there is another agency that is certifying the credit, and then they're simply claiming it on the return with the department. My concern with the language is that it could actually require us to do our audit-type work in advance of the filing of the return or with the return itself, which could slow down the processing. Because the language on page 7, lines 12, does say that the department shall approve the claim. So, for example, if I make a donation or conveyance and I want this credit and I file it and I claim a credit of $1.8 million, that is gone for anyone else that wants to claim it. The issue then would be that if the department audits the return and adjusts the credit, then we've denied it to other people that could have qualified for it because the $1.8 million was already granted to the first person that claimed it. I know it's very late in the process to make changes. On the prior page, on page 6, the person who's making the conveyance is actually reporting to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So if you wanted to have a certification process, it might be better to put that certification process with Fish and Wildlife. When it comes to the department, the credit's already been certified. You know exactly how much they're getting, and we go ahead and process it.
Mm-hmm.
So Fish and Wildlife would stop issuing certificates at $1.8 million.
I see what you're saying, where you have a certificate has been issued through ODF&W. They come over to the Department of Revenue and explain to the landowner and taxpayer that you may have that certificate, but you don't have, there's no available revenue to actually allow you to transfer the land over?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, what I would think is that Fish and Wildlife would be tracking the certifications that it issues, and it stops at $1.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes to the tax return, the people that have been issued a certificate are simply taking the credit at that point because it's already been certified by Fish and Wildlife.
Okay. I'd like to hold off on this one.
Let's get a little more clarity
in terms of... Okay, thank you. That's helpful. John Van Lanningham, the Schwachs, and Don, do you want to come up and at least... I know we're not going to do the 838s yet, but I think it'd be good to... And I don't even know if we have the 838s. We don't have them. But if you want to introduce the 838s, and then folks will get them, and we'll pause here and give people a chance to read the 838s.
Mr. Chair, did you give Deborah the authority to go to LC and get this 37 fixed?
What I'd like to do is sit down. There's a couple groups, but sit down with Deborah and the Nature Conservancy and others and see if we can't make this into a workable program. And frankly, if it has time to get into this bill or if we want to have it hanging out there and see if it makes it or not. It's getting late to go back to council. We're hoping to move this as soon as humanly possible so that we can stop meeting every couple hours. Mr. Miner.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. With me is Pat Schwach, who represents consumers who live in parks, and John Van Lanningham. We're part of a coalition of folks who have been working on legislative fixes to address problems associated with the closure of mobile home parks and conversion of those of that property to other uses. Last session, a modest tax credit was approved by the legislature to help folks who were forced to move. Our proposal continued that, maybe expanded it. We have an amendment, I think it's dash 27, that deals with this. So I'm not sure about the numbering. There's some confusion in our...
We were expecting the 38s.
Your list shows that there's 38. The printed amendment shows that it's 27. That's what LC told me last night the number would be.
Mr. Chair,
we haven't seen the 27s,
and we haven't seen the 38s.
Okay, well, talk to us about the ones you know about, the 27s. Yeah, and we'll distribute the 27s. They're warm. and we'll work through. We're going to pause on this one and give folks a chance to kind of go through and make sure we got what we want in there.
Mr. Chair, were you aware that this bill is up in the House today?
I am.
With a minority report?
Very aware of that.
Oh, okay. So are we planning to put it into our bill as well?
We are. We had talked to some of the advocates. Well, I'll let you guys speak for yourself on the concern of having a House bill hanging out there with a minority report, and I'll let them answer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Van Lanningham, Lane County Legal Aid, and I'm the facilitator of the coalition that has, for the last five sessions, produced a coalition bill on mobile home park law. 2735 is the coalition's suggestion for this session for addressing the park closure issue. The bill has been amended with regard to the issue of preemption. There's a lot of controversy over that issue. There's a fair chance that 2735 will not make it out of the session. It is important to all of us that the tax credit make it out of the session. The tax credit was created last session. It's been important this session. The bill 2735 proposes to extend or remove the sunset or extend the sunset and to extend the availability of the tax credit. When your park closes, it costs you as a homeowner between $15,000 and $25,000 to move your home. That's assuming you can find a place to move it to. 2735 would require park landlords to make payments to tenants. Doesn't cover the full cost. The tax credit would help address that cost. For example, if you own a single wide home, we're estimating the cost to move is about $15,000. The 2735 would require $5,000 from the landlord and the $10,000 tax credit. So that's 2735. It's passed House Revenue. Chair Barnhart's committee passed it out last week. It is scheduled for a vote this afternoon. There's a minority report. The issue is preemption. There's no difference between the minority report and the majority report except for preemption. One has full preemption. One has a partial grandfathering of existing and future ordinances before the end of the year. This bill, if it gets out of the House, will get to you. It'll get to you, the Senate. I don't know, late this week. the issue here is whether we have a tax credit that survives the session. The chair suggested to us that we should look at putting in this bill. We'd like to do that. On the House side, a work group led by Representative Chris Edwards looked at the cost. The revenue impact with Mary Ayala from LRO came in at 4.06. The chair has suggested to us that that's high. We've cut it in half. That reduces the tax credit from $10,000 to $5,000. So that means that the homeowners will bear more of the cost. They already will bear some of the cost. But that gets the cost to the state, the revenue cost to the state, down to $2.03 million. Mr. Chair, if I mentioned there's an additional amendment, an additional tax matter that comes from 2735. The number that we got out of LC was A28. I don't see it on your chart. I don't know whether you have it at all. And what A28 addresses is a capital gains break for park landlords who sell their parks to preferred buyers who will maintain them as parks. That's resident co-ops, nonprofits, housing authorities. Senators Monroe and George have heard me describe this before in other committees. It's part of our package with the 984 Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit to facilitate sales to buyers who will maintain the park as a park. That tax credit, that tax break was in the set bill last session. It's been used once in the biennium to preserve a park in Corvallis, where the residents bought the park. We think it's an important tool. The LRO did not give us a fiscal impact. Apparently it's small because it may not be used very often.
And do you know on the Corvallis transaction what the capital gain?
Mr. Chair, no, we do not. That owner would declare his taxes or her taxes next year. So we don't know that. We know the purchase price was $1.86 million for the park.
Senator Chair,
this is more philosophical, but we're going to have to deal with this. And this is the Don. Don, I look at this issue, and I think we're really on the edge of a cliff. Let's just describe it that way. Values continue to go up. I just heard this morning, you probably did, in the Portland metropolitan area, housing prices are not going down. They're going up. Okay? We know the pressure is clear out there in the areas, you know, in part of my district now, what has in the past been considered rural. But here's my question for you. In the past, it was always a reasonable thing that we would look forward to someday selling the big house where we raise the children and moving into a beautiful mobile home park with our friends, which a lot of my friends have done. Okay? They're in there. The danger today is those properties are at risk at any time. At any time, those properties are at risk. A mobile home, particularly the ones today, I mean, they're a really affordable alternative, you know, to a standard stick-built house. Will you ever be able to sell another one with the insecurity of not resolving this issue of a permanent, expected permanent place to place that home? I mean, I just look at it in an industry that's in trouble, too, because why would I buy this when I may have to move it, particularly with the cost of moving so high?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, we think a large part of the problem comes from the state's policy to increase the density of urban areas. Parks formerly were seen as a relatively high density use at 6 to 8 to the acre, but that's no longer the case. In terms of the future of that portion of the industry, I think it's bleak. I know of no park in the state of anywhere within the state of Oregon being built. Lenders are beginning to shy away from financing homes and parks because if the park is closed and the tenant is forced to leave with no place to move the home to, they often abandon their obligations. And so it's this isn't a fix. This is a Band-Aid on the problem.
So, George, if I might add, I'm on LCDC, so Don's just criticized I was going to
Don
say
just
that,
blamed but me, but there was a bill submitted this session. It's not going to move. That would make it easier to expand UGBs to provide land for affordable housing, including new mobile home parks. It's not going to pass. Another bill, also related to mobile home parks, 2096. It was amended by Senator Starr. It will pass. It will require LCDC to report back to the 09 legislature on a similar concept, and LCDC is committed to continuing work on that idea to try to make it so that we can have land that will be affordable for affordable housing and new mobile home parks. At the same time, the coalition, assuming it survives this session, I think is committed to trying to find ways to make park residents feel more secure. The stuff we're doing this session is a step in the right direction. It's not a total fix.
Ms. Schwach.
I'm not sure what I can... I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Pat Schwach. I'm Executive Director for Manufactured Homeowners. And we've been dealing with this crisis that we have on our hands right now for about 3 years. It's just gotten progressively worse. I don't know what the answer... I know what the answer is, but I don't know how to get to that point. But we've got to do something. This tax credit certainly will help. And it makes me just sick to think that the coalition may fall apart because of some of the stuff that's going on right now with these bills. I don't know. Anyway, that's my sad tale. Thank you.
Well, it's been an impressive coalition that you've worked out, that you guys have provided a united front. We'll deal with at least the tax credit issue momentarily or as soon as, and we've got to figure out this Dash 38 issue. But we'll deal with that, and hopefully you get the policy part at least over to the Senate where we can at least work on that also and get a solution there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to have any other questions? Great. Okay, so we're going to pause to get a couple of items straightened out, and then what I'd like to do, how long is our Senate agenda today? And we could always get excused from the floor, although some of us aren't as keen on that as others.
No.
Okay, so why don't we just say 12:30. 12:30.
You know that a caucus is scheduled for noon.
For noon. Can we say 12:30? So we will recess until 12:30. Hopefully that will be our last meeting. Not our last meeting of the committee, but last meeting on 3201. I'd like to post 5:50 too if we have. Are any of the school folks? They were here. So we may post 5:50 and 2210 so we can finish as much work on the tax credits as we can. That's the biofuel bill. So we may post a little larger agenda, the biofuels plus 3201 for what did I say, 12:30?
12:30. I have Ways and Means at 1.
You do.
And there's three bills up, and I think Betsy will probably need me on them.
Okay.
And then I can delay, and I can tell Betsy that she can come get me if she needs my vote.
Okay. We stand in recess. I think we can stand in recess till 12:30. Talk about the Dash 27s and Chris Onuk.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 27s, we heard testimony earlier related to mobile home parks. It provides $5,000 credit to mobile home owners who are required to move due to park closure. And it's for tax years 2007 through 2012. There's a sunset date of January 1, 2013. And it has a revenue impact of $2 million biennium.
Mr. Van Landingham, anything to add? You've been hard at work crafting this amendment with the rest of your coalition.
No, sir. Chris is accurate.
Chris has got it. Questions for Mr. Van Landingham or Chris? Senator?
Do you want to move A27?
27s.
Okay. To House Bill 3201, amended.
Senator George moves the mobile home amendment, the A27s, to House Bill 3201 discussion. And we could wait. Senator Burdick was on her way. Well, you guys don't care. As long as it just takes three. Any objections to that motion? So ordered. This bill is now ready to leave our possession.
Thank you.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's it.
And just a motion to move the bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Jones. Move House Bill 3201 as amended. Do we need to read all amendments?
No.
Okay.
These guys all have read all the amendments.
To the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Senator Courtney, I believe, will be the carrier of that.
That'd be good. That'd be great. Senator George has moved House Bill 3201 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion.
Yeah.
Senator Monroe.
The nurse's situation, how is that going to be handled?
Thank you for asking that. These wonderful nurses who, to me, they found this bill first, which showed some great legislative dexterity, I think, on their part. So we've been discussing with them. We've met with, I think they have really quickly found all the other nursing organizations, and I'm trying to see if they're in the room. I don't see them.
State board just called. That's what that was.
Oh, so she got a call from the State Board of Nursing. They are trying to get unanimity within the nursing community, and if they do, and I think they do, we do have, and I just hate to say this, one more vehicle.
Don't give out the number.
For these guys, we have one more vehicle that we could take a look if we want to do something this legislative session.
Just a small van, not a big truck?
It is a, right. It's a hybrid.
A hybrid.
Further discussion. So, Senator Burdick, we are now voting on the amended version of 3201.
Good job should pass, Mr. Chair.
I agree. Any objections to sending that bill to the floor with a do-pass recommendation? None, and I will carry the bill, and thank you mostly committee for keeping up with an omnibus bill and meeting with a lot of folks that are interested in the legislative process.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, we were starting to call it ominous.
Ominous.
Omnibus. Ominous.
Okay, so let's just go right through open work session on Senate Bill 550. Representative Dallin, Senator Farrelly, if you... Okay. Senator Farrelly, did you have
He's on another one.
My understanding is we are considering a very narrowly drafted amendment. Steve, and where is, well, I don't see any of the school folks. Oh, there you are, Chuck. Do you want to?
We have a copy of the amendment.
Yes. Can you get Chuck the A5s?
They should probably have the other one now.
Steve Meyer.
Mr. Chair and committee members, you have before you Senate Bill 550-A5. This is a gut and stuff, so the bill would become what you have in the dash A5. What it is doing is to extending a sunset date that currently is July 1, 2007, that applies to the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act dollars that Congress had approved. The extended sunset date is to 2013. We know that there will be these federal dollars for one additional year, 07-08. If it's extended beyond that, this language would still apply. What it does is to assure that those federal dollars would be distributed to the counties, go into the county school fund, at least 25% of them, 75% into the county road fund. The 25% in the county school fund would be distributed to the school districts in those counties that receive these dollars and then be included as local revenue in the school equalization formula, as has been the policy since 2001 when these dollars started coming.
Questions for Steve?
Chuck Meyer.
Chuck
Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
He's the chair of the Beaufort School Board, is Chuck Meyer. I'm in the same kind of category.
Mr. Chairman, Chuck Bennett representing the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Steve did a great job describing the A5 amendments. This was discovered in the process of taking a look at the distribution formula. We didn't realize this sunset was arriving in the next couple of weeks. It would be unfortunate, Mr. Chairman, if we were to receive the federal forest fees this year and quite potentially for the next 5 years and have them arrive at DAS and stay there. This gives a chance for these funds to go to use in the classroom as well as in the county road funds. So we'd ask you please to approve this amendment.
Great. Questions for Chuck? Anyone else need to? We're in work session.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A5 amendments to Senate Bill 550.
Senator Rod Monroe has moved the A5 amendments to Senate Bill 550. Discussion. Objections to that motion. So ordered. Senator Monroe.
Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 550 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe has moved Senate Bill 550 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Objections. So ordered. Who wants to carry that? Lieutenant Gallum will carry that bill.
On the Senate floor?
Mm-hmm. We can try. Do you want to carry it? Senator Monroe will carry the bill. Open a work session on House Bill 210, the biofuel package. Chris.
Biofuel bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the biofuels bill. There's a number of things. I don't know if you want me to read through all of them.
We've heard the bill.
You've heard it, yes.
It's been vetted pretty well. It's up to you. I don't need a section by section, but if the committee wants to be refreshed. Not seeing any refreshment needed.
Bill should pass.
Oh, you do? Okay. Then let's bring up Van Hoff, you want to come up? And Mr. Graney, you want to come up? Senator Farrelly, would you like to join the group?
I'm here to learn.
Oh, good. Me too.
Okay.
You don't have to. I think we have a question, Senator George.
Okay, you want to go ahead with that? Could you clarify for the record the intent of the language in House Bill 2210B in Section 22B, where it seems to imply that Oregon company could receive a tax credit for crop imported from other states because of one word that's in there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, Mike Graney from Department of Energy for the record. No, I think the bill, if you look further to Section 5, does the tax, to be able to tax credit, the biomass must be produced or collected in Oregon. Collected, I think, is intended for waste products such as woody biomass, animal parts, waste grease. That's where the collection comes in, but the product is in Oregon. And then in the case of the agricultural products, those are grown in Oregon. This is intended to be incentives for Oregon businesses. It's not intended to produce materials or grow materials from out of state and import them into Oregon and have that covered by the tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Howard, can you talk to your peers in the governor's office about cell phone etiquette when they come to other questions for the panel? Senator Farioli, good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. State Senator Ted Farioli, District 30. Let me say to the committee at the outset, I also represent Mount Hood Timber Operators. It's forest products producers and the utilizers of federal land for grazing in Grant and Harnett County. One of my members operates a cogeneration plant. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to come forward with a concern that I would like to have laid for the record, and that's why we have the experts here to help me make that clarification. In the RPS, Senate Bill 838, we had a date that precluded a number of already existing cogeneration plants from participating in that process because we set a date, in my opinion, arbitrarily in 1995, prior to which those existing facilities would not qualify under RPS. This anomaly stranded about plus 50 megawatts of electricity on the wrong side of that date. And they are, in fact, the early adopters of these technologies and have been serving their communities for decades. We were not able to convince folks that it was unreasonable to create an unlevel playing field and a list of winners and losers going forward in the RPS. I believe in this bill what we have is some definitions that allow all producers using woody biomass to participate equally. And I'd like, for the record, to get some clarifications from the gentleman to my left and to my right.
Great.
Mr. Chairman, again, Mike Graney. Senator Farioli is correct. The only date applicabilities refer to tax credit actions that would occur after the effective date of the Act. There's no restriction on the source of the wood, for example, other than a restriction on page 2 of the bill that biomass does not mean wood that's been treated with creosote or other chemical compounds. That's the only restriction on wood. In terms of wood as a source, for example, that some of these facilities would have excess wood waste that they wouldn't burn, would want to turn into ethanol or through cellulosic conversion, the date of those facilities would not be a restriction in any way. So I don't think this presents the same type of issue that Senate Bill 838 does with respect to dates of facilities.
Mr. Van Hoff,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll defer to Department of Energy on that definition explanation. And as the Department of Energy will be the agency tasked with implementing the bill, I think that's the most credible information.
Senator George.
Earlier in this session, an OPB video was handed out to every legislator, and in that was a discussion of what to do about the condition of the forest and the danger of a catastrophic series of fires. In that video, there was a view of an operation over in eastern Oregon, of course, that was using the overfueling materials for the direct consumption burning for the production of energy. And in there, former Governor Kitzhaber indicated that we needed to be thinking without restriction on the idea of utilizing that to the maximum level. If that facility was built a few years ago and their production, what I would do, declared to be green, I don't know if that's correct. Would they qualify? I got from your answer, the answer would be yes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, if it was built before 1995, it would not qualify as counting for Senate Bill 838.
Right.
This bill deals with fuel, liquid fuels, rather than electricity production. So the date really doesn't come into play unless, for example, you were going to turn existing electricity generating facility, add on the capability of making ethanol fuel, which, and there are some combined facilities elsewhere in the country. And the date of the beginning of that facility, the initial part of it, is irrelevant to the various incentives in this bill, or for that matter, House Bill 2211, Business Energy Tax Credit. They'd be able to use that for expansions and additions, mm-hmm. Such as cellulosic conversion as well.
Did you hear what you were hoping to
Mr. Chair, I did hear that woody biomass or cellulosic conversions would be available for fuel production. And I guess I need to know if the fuel, in fact, would be also the type of feedstock that would fuel cogeneration plants.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ferriello, well, yes, that with the cellulosic conversion, once it becomes commercially viable, we would be able to use the same wood that fuels cogeneration facilities and convert that to ethanol. And that is allowed by this bill. That is covered in terms of the producer tax credit and the consumer tax credit. And the use of that product to meet the renewable fuel standard, the same as agricultural-based ethanol.
So, Mr. President, or excuse me, possibly someday, Mr. Chairman, the issue for me is maintaining the viability of electrical cogeneration plants and scattered across rural Oregon dating back to 1938. This bill does talk about the fuel issues, but in terms of production of ethanol, I believe.
Yes.
And is a partial answer. The real answer is back in 838, we've apparently created winners and losers for some reason. And I was hoping that we could use this bill as a vehicle to eliminate that disequity. We do have some amendments that are on the way, but I'm not sure that the chair isn't in the full rush mode to get this bill out of committee today.
Much to these guys that have been advocating for 2210 say that I would move it when we move the tax credit package that just passed and would like to try to move them together. And that's the agreement that I have and would like to keep it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Senator Ferrioli or the panel? Thank you.
Thank you.
Dave Van Hock. You did get agreement on the governor's emergency declaration authority. That was one of the issues lingering.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the governor's office is okay with the proposed amendment for the bill that would deal with the governor's authority.
And there is a bill. I don't know the number.
I think it's
B-13.
3488, and I think it's in your committee right now.
It is, huh?
And Mr. Chair, I want to apologize for the cell phone inconvenience, but it was the excitement from all the advocates for 2210 that have been waiting for a work session and finally got it. So they're all ringing my phones off the hook.
I don't
so
believe that.
Thank you very much.
I don't
for
believe it was your wife calling for.
Actually, you're right.
Are we moving that or not?
No, we are not. Dave, that's the 3488.
Mm-hmm. So
we're ready to go.
You're ready to go with moving B?
Yeah, no amendments.
Okay, no amendment. Move House Bill 2210 be engrossed. Floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2210 B to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Objections to that motion? So ordered. Congratulations. Who would be a good carrier of
who's in the Senate has worked particularly hard.
Senator Bakken.
Okay, well, Senator Bakken carried the bill.
Yeah,
okay, open a work session on Bill 635. Howard and Steve, do you guys want to talk about the underlying policy issue that we're working on here? And Chris?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have 635, which increases modifies the reimbursement process for contributions to the film fund. And you have two amendments in front of you. One of them, the dash two, changes exactly how that reimbursement is conducted. And then you have a dash three amendment, which strips out the credit from this bill. And the reason that is done is because the credit was adopted in 3201.
So we just need to do the twos and the threes to get the policy portions of what we did in 3210 accomplished. I don't know. There's much more to Steve and Howard.
Brief overview?
I don't think we need. Do we need a brief overview of the film?
Okay,
we need both amendments.
Believe we need the twos and threes to get everything that was in 635 done at that point.
Okay.
Senator.
I'll go ahead. I thought
George.
It was. Okay, move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 635.
Senator George has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 635. Discussion. Objections. So ordered.
Now moves the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 635.
Senator George has moved the dash three amendments to Senate Bill 635. Discussions. Objections. So ordered. Senator George.
Move amended 635 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George.
635.
Senator George has moved Senate Bill 635 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Objections. So ordered. We'll have Representative or Senator Metzger carry. He's been asking me about that bill. He'll carry that bill. Okay, we're done. We stand adjourned. Thank you, committee, we had a lot of meetings the last 3 days, and we're getting close to being finished. We stand adjourned.
Thank you very much.